The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone. And welcome to those of you who are new to the temple for the first time. I was on vacation after Sesshin, which was a little nerve-wracking to do a Sesshin and then go right away. But it was with my mother, who I really appreciated seeing her. She's 95, and she's doing well. But I noticed when I sat there, I had a lot of restlessness in my body and mind, and felt kind of, wasn't worry, but it was restless, I would say, anxiety. Some I could trace back to, you know, why, and sometimes I just didn't have to know. It was just there. just a mind state, right? And Zazen would help me settle down. And this is always my little travel companion, the Dharmapada. It's nice for trains and planes and wherever you are. And I opened it to mind, the restless, agitated mind. What a great thing to open to. Perfect. You can't go wrong, right? Yourself. Perfect. Love yourself and watch today, tomorrow, always. First establish yourself in the way, then teach, and so defeat sorrow. So this was mind. As the Fletcher whittles and makes straight their arrows, so the master directs their straying thoughts. Like a fish out of water, stranded on the shore, thoughts thrash and quiver, for how can they shake off desire? They tremble, they are unsteady, they wander at their will. It is good to understand, control them, and to master them brings happiness. But how subtle they are, how elusive. The task is to quiet them, and by ruling them, to find happiness. With single-mindedness, the master of their thoughts, they end their wandering, seated in the cave of the heart. They find freedom. How can a troubled mind understand the way? If a person is disturbed, they will never be filled with knowledge. An untroubled mind, no longer seeking to consider what is right and what is wrong, a mind beyond judgments, watches and understands. Know that the body is a fragile jar, and make a castle of your mind. In every trial, let understanding fight for you to defend what you have won. For soon the body is discarded. Then what does it feel? A useless log of wood? It lies on the ground. Then what does it know? Your worst enemy cannot harm you as much as your own thoughts unguarded. But once mastered, no one can help you as much, not even your father or your mother. That's the last line. Your thoughts unguarded. So after my mother, I went to someone's place that had a nice land. And as soon as I got on this land, I could feel like, right, just the sky was huge and the earth and the trees, and there was water, and I was like, oh my God, this is so good. I hope you all get, it's there. It's there, it's here. But it was like, okay, I take that in. That was really, and I took a walk. They have this loop through the woods. And I found these little nuts, but they were empty, aged. But one of them, the universe was speaking, was like, two holes, which was like to me two little, and this big hole here, right? So I took that one. It spoke to me. I took that little nut and I brought it back and I painted a red line around this big hole. It's like Monk, the scream. Ah! And then these two little eyes and I put eyebrows up. And on the back I wrote, what, me worry? So the Buddha taught about just about every mind state. I think every mind state that we have, Buddha was able to lead us through that journey of experiencing ourself and prescribe, give us a prescription, an antidote, a medicine, how to heal ourselves. Taking that medicine, of course, is up to us. Could sit on the shelf and we can look at that label, how to relieve restlessness. But we actually have to do it. We have to take it. And so I was like, okay, let's practice here. And so I went to the Satipatthana Sutra because I knew this was kind of a hindrance, an obstacle, right? So Buddha speaks about five main obstacles in our life. In our, especially in a practice, in a meditation life that we will encounter. Worldly desire, right? Don't we know that? Worldly desire and how that can just keep us racing, right? Ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, uncertainty, meaning a kind of skeptical doubt. And he recommended these remedies, these antidotes, and the states of mind and how, explaining how they prevent us from settling down. So who doesn't have to deal with any of these mind states, right? And we have a practice. When I wrote What Me Worry, I was thinking about that term people use of a worry wart. Like, how did that come about? And it's a worry wart is a person who worries without reasonable cause. I guess I'm a wart. So in Pali, the word, so I wanted to look at the fourth, this fourth one, restlessness and worry. In the Pali word for restlessness is Udhaka. And it's translated as agitation, excitement, distraction, but also the one, this part that really got me was shaking above. That's restlessness. Shaking above. Where the mind is not settled into, say, the breath, or it's hovering around it. Restlessness literally means without rest, right? Without rest, which is expressed in all aspects, all of these obstacles or hindrances. There's a restlessness of mind. Like he says, like a fish stranded out of water on the shore, right? Flopping around, right? Thoughts thrash and quiver, he put it that way. There's a quivering. So I ask you, do you know how to rest? Do we know how to rest? What is, we have rest practice embedded in Sesshin, like learning how to, like rest, like what is that? Can you rest? What is rest for you? What is restful? So there's a lot of unrest. That's probably part of my quiver. There's a lot of unrest. And I'm brought into it in a certain way in my mind. And I have to meet it in a way that's more helpful. It doesn't build on itself. Unrest is, restlessness is contagious, if you haven't noticed. So the other half is worry. And also, I was speaking with a friend this week. She actually goes on a Zoom, and you know what they do? It's called Rest Zoom. And they get on and they rest. Like, everyone just, like, rests. Like, you can turn it off, you can, you know, grab a pillow, you can have, and they all rest together. Isn't that cool? She's trying it out, you know? But I like that resting together. You help me rest. Sangha helps me rest, for sure. And the other half of that fourth hindrance is worry. And the word for worry is kukuka, which I think is very interesting because it does make you a little kukuka, right? When you're worried, you get a little kukuka. It means literally bad doneness. Bad doneness. That doesn't even sound right, but that's how they translate it. Bad doneness. A mind state of regret, remorse, or anxiety when we worry. You know, the feeling of not having done things that we should have done, or we've done things that we shouldn't have done. That kind of worry, regret, remorse. There's a Yiddish word I would hear around my house from my grandmother, and she would say somebody was spilkas, which meant full of anxiety. It's like that when we have our knee under the table and it's going brrr, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, or you're biting your nails, pacing back and forth, spilkas. There's spilkas. I think restlessness always accompanies worry, but I don't always think that worry accompanies restlessness. I think we can be restless without worry or regret. Just plain old restless. The body that won't settle. And worry is the agitation that blocks our awareness. Both are called by the Buddha obstacles or hindrances, until they're not. You know, when we can notice them, then we can work with something. So nothing stays. They're not fixed, an obstacle, or, you know, it's not just because we're restless, that's how we are, or forever, or anxious. But it does help for that moment, and that we're carrying it, it does keep us from our stillness, from our quietness, regardless of our level of experience. So you can't say, I've been practicing for 30 some years. I shouldn't be da-da-da, fill in the blank. No, human. But how we meet that is different when we're in a practice life. The Buddha said restlessness and worry, udhaka and kukuka, is like windswept water in a pot whose waves prevent us from seeing our own reflection. So it's, you know, you can't see yourself. He also said all five of the hindrances are self-fulfilling makers of blindness. In this case, agitation begets agitation. Worry feeds on worry, and together they impede our clear seeing. I found another translation that calls these flurry and guilt feeling. Flurry and guilt feeling, which reminded me of those snowmen and the snow persons, shall we say? I don't know who's in there. A snow person. And when you shake the globe, they're just sitting there, but everything else is going crazy around them until it settles down, right? It's all settled. Worry covers all our preoccupation, past, present, and future, and it can also take many forms we're familiar with. Anxiety, guilt, regret, fear, anticipation, any of those things. That's worry. So maybe we worry about our practice. Are we doing it right? There's a worry. Worry about if what we've done or what we've not done. And as we do that, our minds get a little bit weaker, as it were. It loses its power. They lose their power. I call worry and guilt emotions that are not in service to my well-being. It gives me a sense of doing something about a situation I'm uneasy about. It's like I'm doing something about a situation I'm uneasy about, but it's not really doing anything except adding to the problem. But it feels like I'm doing something when I'm guilty, feeling guilty or worrying. For example, I respond to someone and it hurts them in some way. And now I feel guilty about it. So now I'm going after myself about what I did. How could I do that? What was I thinking? For real? Haven't you learned? Now they don't like you, right? So boom, ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum. We keep worrying about it. And does that alleviate anything for the person I hurt? No. I just go. I get hurt over and over again. I mean, it's good to feel the burden of the action, for sure. But then it's that add-on, right? The continuing it. I definitely don't feel better. And it makes a painful situation excruciating. And then you're just sitting there, or you're walking around with it. And it gives me this sense like I'm doing something because I'm thinking about it. But how am I thinking about it? How are we thinking about it? It's like, let's add a little suffering to the mix, kind of like that. The thing is, it's just uncomfortable, and it's hard to be in my skin. That's it. It's really uncomfortable. So it's hard to sit with discomfort. Would you agree? Everyone's going, yeah, just this morning, right now. Most of us know it firsthand. And actually, this is what people express to me all the time. This is hard. And I'm like, yeah, that's all I can say. Yeah, but you're facing, this is it. It's hard. It's no joke. It's hard to sit with whatever it is. Give it names, shame, sadness, whatever. Any feelings of discontent. Mostly because why? We don't want what's happening. And then it gets contagious. Then we start the war, the fighting, the building. So we're trying to stay right there with the quiver. In the Heart Sutra, what is it? With no hindrance in the mind, no hindrance, therefore no fear. Can we just shake? When we're just shaking and not creating, we're just shaking. It's very different. So sometimes when I tell people I practice meditation or Zazen, right away they say, I could never sit still. I mean, we might have said it too when someone said, you want to go practice? We're like, I can never sit still. But restlessness is just the symptom. It's not the reason we can't sit still and be with ourselves. That's just the symptom. We want to get below that restlessness. That's why we stay put. so we can get below the restlessness. Many years ago, my mom's response to, like, when she asked me, like, what am I doing at a monastery, one of those few moments, what I was doing there, and I said, well, we sit a lot. We just sit still a lot. And she was like, why do you want to do that? Why would you ever want to do that? Yes. Why, pray tell, would you ever want to sit still? And I was like, that's a really good question. I had to, like, why would I? Why do I? You know, when I was new to practice, I was doing it, but I was like, why do I want to do this? Why do I actually want to sit still? That's an important part. Those of you that just learned Zazen today and were asked to sit still, why? Why would you ever, why do you come here? Why do you want to sit still? Well, what's the other choice? What's it been like? How's it working? That might give us something and some strength to sit still, some strength to not keep samsara going. So sometimes we're we'll start projecting onto the future. We want a better future, a better time, a better state. So together, restless and worry, the Buddha says, are the physical and mental agitation that keep us from being able to settle in our seats, in our bodies, in our minds. And as I said, the good news is they're conditioned. The hindrances are conditions. I mean, they're not inherent qualities of our mind. They're not fixed. They're unstable. They're uncertain, which means we need some kind of fuel to keep it going, right? They have to have fuel to keep themselves going. So what's your fuel? What are you feeding to keep it going? Mary Oliver had this poem I wanted to share. It's Mary Oliver style, so it's called I Worried. You might know it. But it kind of sums it up. I worried a lot. Will the garden grow? Will the rivers flow in the right direction? Will the earth turn as it was taught? And if not, how shall I correct it? Was I right? Was I wrong? Will I be forgiven? Can I do better? Will I ever be able to sing, even when the sparrows can do it, and I am, well, hopeless? Is my eyesight fading, or am I just imagining it? Am I going to get rheumatism, lockjaw, dementia? Finally, I saw that worrying had come to nothing and gave it up, and took my old body and went out into the morning and sang. There we go. More helpful, right? Joy. Joy. So you're sitting there quietly, following your breath, and suddenly you think, I have to plug in my computer. Now. I have to take the soup out of the freezer. Now. I got to get back to my knitting. That row is all messed up. Now. Like that. I have to wipe my face. There's a spider web on it. Now. I'll die. It feels like it gets so blown out of shape, the things that when we sit still, they get really big. For me, it's like, got to get back. What am I going to make in clay, right? Got to get back to a painting. Like, I know where I want to strike next. Like, I'm not working on it, right, in Zazen. Okay, this is going to be a great retreat for the temple. And I'm, like, doing the whole full schedule, right? Who do I want to speak with? What am I going to say? I think I'll alphabetize the library right now. Maybe I'll put them by colors. Yeah, that one there, that one there. Yeah. So, yeah. But really, we're just working with this very strong sensation, discomfort, restlessness, grasping, fabrication. So whatever we're experiencing in the moment just feels so unbearable, those moments, right? Especially itches, right? It's like, don't move, you must be kidding me. I could handle it in one swoop. But we can handle it in another way and give ourselves the opportunity to tolerate our discomfort. And you know what? We don't die unless we're having a heart attack. That's happened, but usually not. We won't die. It's not the end of the world that it's like that for a moment. And if you can actually bear it and practice it, which I'll talk about, changes everything. The turbulent water spills out of the pot, getting others wet. It's like when an anxious person comes in the room, we can make a whole group anxious. Or you can feel it when someone's anxious in the room. That's okay. That's what we do for one another. We can hold it. Help each other, which is what we need to do in these days with our steadfastness that we do have. Our eyes are meeting with someone in kindness, kind speech, access our own kind, calm. The Buddha says what is happening when we are without rest, we're like a prisoner who's not able to move freely. Mind is captured, body is captured, and they're led this way and that by agitation. Or like the pot in which the water is being disturbed by wind. The wind churns the water, it creates waves, and we can't see our reflection. We can't see ourselves. Straying thoughts, we start to tremble. But what's agitating the water? What is the thought that is robbing our rest? So the first instruction the Buddha gave for each of the hindrances to simply notice. Notice your experience. Your attention, please. That's what he's saying. When we have that, your attention, please. Now hear this, right? and he says, instead of trying to find, there are obvious ways we may feel and subtle ways we may feel it's hovering. So we might notice, I just can't settle down, or I'm worried about what might happen. Instead of trying to find reason, instead of keeping the thoughts going, settle in the body. If we're dealing with restlessness, settle in your body, and settle in the mind if you're dealing with worry. Breathing in. I notice I'm breathing in. Breathing out. I notice I am breathing out. And ask what will happen if I sit here another minute. Let's find out. Breathing in. What will happen if I sit here for another minute? And find out. So it might seem obvious that the antidote is awareness itself. Simply noticing we're worried or restless. And that takes the edge right there off of that restlessness. And so does stillness. So, I've been reading this book called On Becoming an Alchemist by Catherine McCune. She's helping my friend write a book as a ghostwriter. Just spilled it. And she says, I like what she says about attention. She says, attention is selectively applied to perception. It is an inward decision, usually made unconsciously, about what is worth perceiving and what isn't. Attention both finds meaning and creates meaning. Our whole culture seems to have come down with the case of hyperactive attention deficit order. Most of us live in an overstimulating environment. We're bombarded by abrasive, insistent, and often meaningless claims of our senses. To the extent that we allow our attention to be jerked around in this way, We are allowing our inner world to be created by others. We are permitting them to decide for us what is meaningful and what isn't. It's odd that Americans, who are so fierce in defense of freedom of will, raise no objection at all to this incessant trespassing on their freedom of attention. If you think of attention as a form of wealth, a currency we speak of paying, the average American gets robbed several times a minute. Our attention gets hijacked by inner stimuli as well. How many of our thoughts, your thoughts, do you actually decide to think? And when do you consciously choose the topic? How long you will be able to stick with it before the mind gets carried away by a chain of associations? Most of our thoughts are involuntary. We don't make them. They just show up, right? They just show up. And we can't control this. Our mental freedom consists in deciding which thoughts to pursue and which to let drop. Our individuality is expressed by the bestowing and withholding of our attention, rather by the various thoughts that vie for it. Just a little bit more. She's also a Vipassana practitioner, so she sits. To appreciate the splendor and wonder of watching paint dry, a person has to be more than a little bored. Our attention doesn't know what to do with itself. One simple way to free up some attention is to eliminate superfluous entertainment. Even a very busy life has moments in which nothing much is happening. The trick is to let nothing be nothing instead of trying to embellish it. Let your attention go naked while engaging in boring activities like commuting. Approach a long wait, on hold, in line, or at a dentist's office without an amusement backup plan. The best practice I know for developing control of attention is mindfulness meditation. How about that? It opens space in which subtle perceptions can arise by teaching you to make friends with boredom. So, let us get quiet enough to see we're the ones stirring the water. We're the ones, our thoughts. We can practice not staring. If we don't disturb the water with our mind, it will settle down. It will be like a nice, peaceful lake. And we can remain unmoving for a while. And then naturally, our body and mind will settle, just like water on that windless day. Hongzhi, a 12th century, in his practice instructions on sit free in worldly anxiety, writes, this is from a more poetic Zen way, if you truly appreciate a single thread, your eye can suitably meet the world and its changes. Seeing clearly, don't be fooled, and the 10,000 situations cannot shroud you. Moonlight falls on the water, wind blows over the pines. Light and shadow do not confuse us. Sounds or voices don't block us. The whistling wind can resonate, pervading without impediment through the various structures. So we can use that imagery of water, still water. That's a way to settle down. Just still water. Be that still water to counter the agitation, reminding the body, reminding the mind, and letting themselves want to settle, because they do, with the mindfulness, with attention. And as I mentioned, the challenging thing about the hindrances, they're self-fulfilling, right? So the more restless we are, the more we feel that, the more worried we are, it builds on it. The more we stir the water, the faster it turns. We have to pay attention to the vessel, the pot, which is our body. One Dharma teacher said, when you go to the movies, what is the thing without which the film couldn't exist, but which does not in any way affect the story. The screen. He equates the screen with our Buddha nature. But it works. And with a slight tweaking, we can call it our body-mind. Without our bodies, without our minds, we couldn't feel restless or worried. They don't need to be restless or worried to exist. At the same time, they can hold both perfectly, just like a pot can. I love to visualize that myself as still water, because water has enormous power, has enormous calm, and it can go the other way as well. Also, you might say, I breathe in restlessness. I breathe out restlessness. I breathe in worry. I breathe out worry. That's very calming. You can practice in that way. Or we can remind ourselves what Shanti Davis says, if you can do something about it, why worry? So if you can do something about it, why worry? If you can't do anything about it, why worry? Why worry? What, me worry? Nobody said liberation is easy. But try samsara, confusion, spinning, exponentially harder. So we can pay attention, we can investigate, be with, and be infinitely kind and patient with yourself, because this takes time. This takes time. And we don't like that either. We don't like things to take time. We're from McDonald's culture, right? Just drive through. But this takes time. That was one of my teachers used to say. He used to call it, my mime teacher, he would call it, we were suffering from McDonald's mentality, that we expected to get our drive through, get our food, and take off. It's not like that. We have to chew 1,000, 10,000 times. Be patient and kind. Because it's enough to pay attention and be mindful, but there's a tenderness that needs to be cultivated in this, for sure. In attention to the restless, in attention to worry. And then there's joy. What's that? You're all saying, what? Finding joy and contentment because we notice. That's pretty good. That's something to be joyful about. Cultivating joyful mind, a mind that finds delight, is peaceful and at ease. Mind able to rest because it doesn't seek, strive too much, withdraws projections, doesn't distract itself. Happy to just be. As Mary Oliver says, finally, I saw that worrying had come to nothing and gave it up. I took my body out into the morning and sang. There we go. There we go. Right? You took your body out into this morning. And what do we do first? Liturgy. We sang. Buddha says, develop contentment with whatever you have. The present moment, the silence, the breath. So if you ever see restlessness in your mind, remember the word contentment. Remember the word contentment. Can you simply find joy in the gift of awareness? It's very interesting to say, this is fantastic. I am shaking like a leaf. I said that to Joshin this morning. I said, I'm shaking. To myself, I was going, It's fantastic. I'm aware. I'm shaking. Don't know. Shaking. And the practice of being with each other. The practice of being with others that are able to hold us, hold the container. The Sangha, Dharma companionship, noble friends who encourage us, smile at us, support, inspire us on the path. We're also each other's cure. Hopefully we can support each other in being nourished by a heart deeply at rest in itself. So I'll end with Hongzhi, who says, put to rest the remnants of your conditioning. Sit empty of worldly anxiety, silent, bright and clear, and illuminating, blank and accepting, far-reaching and responsive, without encountering external dusts. Fulfilled in your own spirit, arrive at this field and immediately recognize your ancestors. Some of them knew, or you wouldn't be here. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.